What it do, listeners? Welcome to part two of our What's Up Wednesday with Jeffrey Thorne, or as my co-pilot dubbed it, part one remixed.
That's right. We spent the first part talking about Jeff's career like it was easy, and it feels easy sometimes because these hardships are every day. But here's the fact of the matter. Jeff is a black male, like I'm a black male, and Wilson is a black male. And it affects how we move through the world.
What's up? What's up?
What up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
It is Wednesday, my dude.
You are now tuned in to What's Up Wednesday from the Power You in Fiction podcast. Jeffrey Thorne Part 2, Life As It Was Lived.
Welcome back, my dude. Was talking a little wild at the end of Part 1, weren't you?
I know. I was just sort of taken by how Johnny Everyman, his story sounds and how it meant for this Jeff if you remove the blackness. When Jeff said to me, "It lives harder than it reads," that really stuck with me because even without all the things being said, me listening to that first part without explicit mention of his blackness, I still hear all the subtext that someone who hasn't lived it doesn't. But we've always known that it's something that we have to consider first.
Right, so how are we tackling this?
We're going to start all the way back at the beginning and focus on the blackness of his Star Trek sci-fi origin. Because way back when we were researching for the pilot season, we had those core questions, and his answer to the first question last time is the same as his answer to my first question this time. But in the context of his existence as a black boy.
You talking about the question that started it all off. When was the first time you saw yourself in a fictional character, and what effect did that have on you?
That's the one. And Jeff's answer is so precise, and in some ways, that made him.
I remember. I can tell you point blank. Part of the reason I'm a writer. My parents broke up. I was at my dad's place. He had his little black and white TV in DC in some little apartment. And one of the things we would do for fun is we would watch Star Trek on that crap TV, Star Trek reruns, the original series. And they did an episode called The Ultimate Computer, written by, I believe, by DC Fontana, who used DC because her name was Dorothy and being a woman in science fiction was really hard back then.
Yeah.
And this dude comes on, who's the guy who designed all the computers on the Enterprise, Dr. Daystrom.
M5 tie-in.
M5.
This is Daystrom.
Daystrom, acknowledged.
M5. Do you know me?
Daystrom, Richard. Originator of Comtronic Duotronic Systems. Born.
Stop.
And I was like, wait, what? I mean, who was there? That was enough. That was part of the reason we were watching it anyway. Right? Look at this. There's George Takei's there. Michelle Nichols there. All these people on the bridge working together. This is great. Plus Spock. Oh, my God. Right. And then homeboy shows up. Yeah, this is Dr. Daystrom. He's smarter than Spock. He designed all this stuff and he's got a better version of it. Now, at the end of it, he ended up going nuts. Right. Because can't have a black man with that much smarts. Got to go crazy.
20 years of groping to prove the things I've done before were not accidents. Seminars and lectures to rows of fools who couldn't begin to understand my systems. Colleagues laughing behind my back at the boy wonder and becoming famous, building on my work.
Jimmy's on the edge of a nervous breakdown, if not insanity,
which might not be that far from the truth. But he was I mean we're gonna swear he was the shit. I was like riveted. I was just like, what the hell? And Spock's talking to him like he's just like another Spock. And he told Captain Kirk to screw off because he's going to do this, and that's what happened? Damn! Right? And after that, I was like, oh, okay, I guess it's open. I guess it's open season, open field. I'm doing what I want. I'm doing this. I'm writing this stuff. I'm going to write this stuff. This is great. I didn't know we could be in it like that. It was damn. Right? And then you start seeing on the Star Trek show, who are every week doing increasingly cool stuff, character most people don't even remember, Dr. Mbenga. I don't know why Bones was out those episodes, but black ass Dr. Mbenga was in there being Dr. Mbenga. And he was cool. people don't ever talk about him, but he was there for multiple episodes. There are a couple of times where they had black actors as challenging people. Captain Kirk's boss was Afro-Spaniard, I believe, right? Another thing you never really saw, Admiral whatever his last name was, but he was clearly both black and Latin. If he wasn't, he so looked it.
Stop recording. Not one man in a million could do what you and I have done. Command a starship. 100 decisions a day, hundreds of lives, staked on you making every one of them right. Now I'm telling you, Captain, either you accept a permanent ground assignment or the whole disciplinary weight of Starfleet Command is going to light right on your neck.
But all of that in Star Trek kind of shaped my entree into science fiction. And I was like, I wasn't one of the kids who wanted to wear the uniform or dress up like that. I was like, people write this, right? I want to do that. And then Ursula Le Guin, my favorite author, wrote a series of young adult novels called, they're called Earthsea. There's, I think, four or five of them now. He just died. Rest in power, sister. But it was the first, the lead character is basically a Native American. His best friend's black, right? Lots of powerful women in this thing. And I didn't know these were even things, right? This is just like, this is just a story being told to me. But it was a story about people of color running around fighting dragons and digging rings out of the ground and rescuing people and doing all this stuff. And she didn't make a big deal. And by the way, they're all different colors. She just told you what they look like. And so this lead dude basically looked like an Apache, right? And his best friend looked like an African. And I was like, I'm down for this. That book changed the rest of my life. So yeah, representation absolutely freaking matters. Absolutely it matters because it generates, stimulates the brain in a way that cannot be oversold. So absolutely that matters. The combination of those two things made me into probably a writer, certainly an artist. And it was because I was in those stories. Didn't mean I didn't like the other stories. I love The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and all those other things. As you all know, we have to learn how to project ourselves into fiction that doesn't include us.
Right.
Right? We teach ourselves to do that so we can continue to enjoy. We don't consciously go, okay, whatever. It just happens. You just do it. But when you see your own self in there and it's not a stereotype and it's not at the butt of a joke, it's just I'm in there, something changes in your center. Your center shifts. And it's not about racism. It's not about, like, the story itself is not about, see how these white people doing this. Like, I get tired of that story over and over again. I like to see us, like, have a space adventure. Like, I want to see Finn in Star Wars. I feel every 11-year-old who sees Force Awakens sees Finn running around doing stuff. As much as I have certain problems with a little bit of some of it as a storyteller, overall, they're in that world now.
Yeah.
Those kids, it's like they're never going to grow up without a president who is black, and they're never going to grow up with Star Wars that didn't have a central character that was black. Okay. Let's have, and what's her name? Rose Tycho from the new movie. That's a situation where there's no Asian kid now in the world who's going to grow up with a Star Wars that doesn't have an Asian protagonist who kicks ass.
True that.
Okay. Forever. As long as we're here and they have movies, that's the truth. Right. And some people get all bent about that. Like, well, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, you guys got 98% of everything. That 2% of non-whites and non-straights doing stuff, we can have that. Let us have that. Just sit down for a minute. It's not hurting you, but it's helping a lot of people.
Yo, man. What an answer. Like, I love when we start these joints off like this. I'm locked in. Locked all the way in.
Yo, that reminds me of those conversations we be having about how we grew up in 90s Nicktoons and we had Kenan and Kel and all that. And then we had Gerald on Hey Arnold and Max, several other black characters. And like the 2000s came and we were like, yo, we know we could be here. Where did we go?
Yeah, it's crazy. And like,
the absence.
Yes, it is. It was noticeable. And we had the characters and they were shown in multifaceted ways. Like you always be saying, Susie Carmichael had the biggest house on the block. That was important.
Right.
So, yeah, the dearth of it after, you know, we'll say that exodus of just great black talent in storytelling was just like crushing, man.
And that's the same type of dearth Jeff had when he saw inclusiveness post Star Trek era. Sounded like in that you consumed a lot of different mediums of story. So when you're consuming radio shows and comics and TV shows and books, and you're looking at how they created something, how does that affect the type of stories you want to tell? And what are some strengths and weaknesses you find in telling stories in a particular medium?
Any medium? Well, let me put my blackness on for a second. One thing that bugged me was Star Trek was the only person putting black people in it. If you look at the other shows, there might be one black dude here and there. Generally not anywhere near the lead. Like, as much as I love Mission Impossible, the black character on that show didn't say anything. He just did stuff. Like, he was great at it, but he wasn't, like, for the most part, doing anything. Like, he didn't have a love interest. He didn't have a personality. He was just like, Barney, how are we going to blow up that bridge with all these people around? Don't worry about it. I got it. And then the whole rest of the episode would just be him wiring stuff and doing something. It was cool for a 10-year-old to see that, but it wasn't like Star Trek where they would show up and they'd be a doctor or they'd be the Commodore. The guy that was in charge of Kirk was black. The Commodore that almost court-martialed Kirk was a black dude. Actually, he was a black Latin dude. How about that? All right. These kind of things make an impression on me and you start to notice their absence because I thought of that as just normal. Star Trek was my first movie, TV show that had science fiction component. So anything that wasn't like that, I was like, well, where are all the black folks? Where are the Asian people? Like, is everybody white? What the hell's going on? Are we not supposed to be here? Are they not expecting us to survive this long? Like, what happened to all the black? Where is everybody? Right? This is as a kid. So I wouldn't say it's a conscious thing, but when Milestone Comics showed up, I was like, oh, I'm not the only one who thinks this. Because up until then, I didn't have that conversation very much. I thought, oh, it's just crazy Jeff thinking his thoughts. But when I saw there was enough people to make an entire company based on the fact of where the hell is everybody else, I was like, oh, I guess this is real. So
his dad did him right. He was on the path early, and just like in part one, he ends up attending high school at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts.
Ooh, the Duke, world-renowned jazz singer, songwriter, and composer. All-around legend from the Harlem Renaissance. If you ain't know, now you know.
Same exact one. See, the blackness is in the details. Duke Ellington was from D.C., a.k.a. Chocolate City, a.k.a. one of the blackest city in the nation, a.k.a. the city where Jeff was from and where you currently reside.
Right. And growing up a black boy in a black city, I'm confident there were powers that be who never imagined Jeff would amount to anything coming from his environment, especially in that time.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about because Jeff has had to overcome people outside his household. His parents were great, who were supposed to help guide him, trying to tell him that his goals were out of reach.
For me, it's a special level of mean for an authority figure to look at a kid, just a little kid or a young adult kind of kid, but like a kid nonetheless, and just dismiss their potential.
It almost broke him. And it hurt a little bit to listen to him recall that, even though we know that the ending isn't so bad.
But I wasn't trying that. I wanted to be a writer. Which made people laugh and who what makes you think? A lot of that. But one of the things is I have had people tell me that my whole life. People in authority have been telling me. I had a guidance counselor in high school. God, I can't remember her name. Thank God I can't remember her name because I would burn her ass down. Even if she's dead, I would burn her down. She brought me in her office one day. She just didn't like me. She took a dislike to me. I don't know. Maybe I was a little bit too snarky as a teenager. I certainly never got in any real trouble, but I was one of those kids who would pop off if you said some stupid shit to me. And she didn't like it. But I never said anything bad enough to get sent to the principal. That was the problem. So I was good at it. She just decided she didn't like me. She brought me in her office in my senior year, and she's like, so you're going to be a janitor. You know that, right? And I was like, excuse me? Like, not that there's anything wrong with being a janitor, but, huh? Aren't you the guidance counselor? Aren't you supposed to be, like, trying to uplift me? She's like, I've seen a lot of black men with your attitude, and you have no future, basically. You're going to be doing this, you're going to be doing that, and you're going to wonder your whole life why white people aren't giving you stuff. That's you. And I was like, I think that's you. That's what I think. Are we done here? And then she was like, this little perfect rocket, you know, like she just never could get me. But when I left that room, it hurt me. It cracked me, man. I was like, it was almost like, it wasn't what she said. It was that she was a grown up and I was a kid. I graduated college at 15, high school at 15. I was a kid. You know, and I was like, this grown ass woman just tried to break me, like on purpose, straight up tried to break me. And it wasn't that she did it. It was that she tried it. That made me feel horrible. Like the fact that a grown up would have it in for me like that. Like, damn, what did I do? Like people have been beat down in the streets and hallways. You know, students have been carried off by the cops. Like, but she hates me enough that she's going to try and wreck my whole life with this moment. Wow. What did I do to this chick? You know, couldn't figure out what it was. So then I started thinking, what was it about me that made her just take that dislike? I couldn't figure that out. Then when I was in college, it happened again twice. My guy, what they call my mentor. I was an actor at this point. You have no future in this business. You should quit now. You're wasting your money. You're wasting your folks' money. You're wasting our time. You have no future in this. What are you doing? And I was like, huh? Aren't you supposed... Again, the same question, right? Like, aren't you supposed to be, like, uplifting and pushing me forward? Like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, you just have an irreverent attitude and you don't, you know. Well, and I was like, look, I told you all this in public. I'm going to tell you like this in private. I am not rich. My folks are not rich. This is one of those schools that if it was Harvard, everybody would understand why we're paying so much damn money for me to be here. This is a little school. At this time, CalArts was a little school in California. A conservatory, which meant if I didn't graduate, none of my credits counted. Right? I had blown my scholarship because I yelled at the dean at one point. They were like, okay, no more scholarship. and then a couple of years later, a different mentor said basically the same thing. I don't know if you have this in you. And I was like, what is up with me? That these grown-ass people keep trying to turn me off my path, right? So this is childhood, young adult, older childhood, young adulthood. Adults, people in authority kept trying to get me to quit. So by the time I got out into the world, I'd already told three people to their face, people in authority over me, go fuck yourself, straight up. Like, I don't know who you think you're talking to, but I'm not one of these soft-ass people that their daddy sent them to the school because they couldn't get in somewhere. I busted my ass to get into the school. I beat other applicants to get into the school because we had to audition to get in here. So if you all made the mistake of bringing me in, I suggest you look in the mirror.
That's a tough listen, man.
Yeah, and it feels tough because it feels real. And all this happened before Jeff got out in the world.
Yo, before he even got that Christmas acting gig... It must have been like really real, like realer than real, because we know Hollywood is not an easy biz.
They were. And what Jeff also talked about is the amount of pedigree and fallbacks and privilege those other people had.
So, but yeah, I think the hard parts are the middle, especially when you're younger. You don't have anything under your belt, but so you can't look back and go, well, I got through this, therefore I can get through that. Right. But generally, I think the weaknesses that we have are also our strengths as black people, that you probably have gotten through something worse. By the time you're grown, you've probably gotten through something worse than whatever it is right now. You know, I was trying to talk to people about like different kind of I've never lived in poverty, but we've been at the low end of the middle class a lot in my childhood. So there's all kinds of foods that you'll talk about eating and people be like, oh yeah, we did that, you know, stuff like weird ass stuff. Struggle food, exactly, right?